We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt, that fine gentleman over there. He is the Birdman of Chicago, Traz Dan Rubenstein, sir. I have a bone to pick with you on the bird thing.
Oh, because I called it a hawk?
Well, you called it a red-tailed hawk, and as I was thinking more about it, I was wondering if it was some of your Lafayette bias coming through.
Oh.
Anti-mountain hawk. Mountain hawk
sure.
Being Lehigh. What say
always
you?
The engineers. Always the engineers, Ty. Come on.
How are you?
I'm good. Life is pretty good. I just had a little bit of food. I'm caffeinated. I'm hydrated. And I'm altogether extremely excited for the questions we received. Of course, patrons from verballers.com get priority with this Q&A, mega Q&A episode. Of course, it's extended for patrons on verballers.com. I love these episodes. I love the give and take of hearing from listeners, weighing in on what they're curious about, be it about quarterbacks or coaches or records or road trip diner strategies, which is, I think, something that came in there, or any sort of animus towards Draymond Green for entering the podcasting space. I love all of those.
Oh, yeah.
Those weigh-ins.
Love it.
So, no, these are always my favorite shows, and it is reflective in the number of people who ask questions and listen to these shows.
Absolutely. Well, today, as Dan mentioned, is the big June Q&A episode. It's a two-parter. Part one, the larger part, let's say, will be available publicly, but we're going to save some of the good stuff for the Patreon Verballerhood, which, again, you can access over at verballers.com. Get access to the whole shebang, not only the whole shebang, but also video. You can also dive on in with our Discord server, our Discord chat, whichever terminology you prefer, and some of the other bonus stuff that we're offering over on Patreon. One more time, verballers.com. Oh, by the way, this episode, all of our episode, driven by our good friends over at Geico. We appreciate their support so, so very, very much.
Yes.
Don't forget to go on out to solidgiveaway.com. You got about a week left to throw your name in the hat to win that Brian Brzee signed Clemson mini helmet. About a week left. We will draw a winner when the contest is through and send that helmet out. And if I didn't mention it at the top, do not hesitate to subscribe to the Solid Verbal. We are doing episodes each and every week, twice a week, until we get into preview mode at some point next season, at which point we flip the switch, we throw the breaker, Dan, and then suddenly it's three episodes a week. That's when the rubber really meets the road for us here at Solid Verbal HQ, because that definitely signifies the start of preview, for all intents and purposes, the start of college football season. So subscribe to the show, tell your friends to subscribe to the show, Follow us on social media so you don't miss any of the clips and fun stuff that we're posting out on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram or wherever. Things are going to start heating up here within the next month or so.
4+ shows if you're on Patreon, right? Every week during the season. News regarding merchandise, news regarding live shows, news regarding updates to Patreon, news regarding updates to audio and video, all sorts of stuff. We got previews starting before we know it. So this is a time of great change.
Oh, yeah. Well, on that note.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail on the Solid Verbal.
Once a month here in the off season, Dan, we've been doing our part to pay homage to those of you who write into solidverbal@gmail.com, to those of you who send us tweets and DMs on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube and gosh knows wherever else, Facebook, snail mail, carrier pigeon. All of those communication methods have been accounted for here in this big old doc that we put together for our big June Q&A. This is a combination of messages that we got from folks publicly and folks privately, both in email and on Patreon. So with that said, Dan, we've got a football bucket, a non-football bucket. I leave it to you to pick the very first question. Where do you want to go first?
We're starting with football. This is a college football audio program. And if you can hear the lawnmower outside, the yard work outside, look, we are lawn forward here. Because always, even as college football goes more towards a turf model, which I understand, it's that smell of fresh grass that draws us back each autumn, Ty. Am I wrong? Am I wrong? Raul, Alpha, patron for Ballers.com. If blank could be one college football program, or could be several, really gets it going on the recruiting trail, it would cut into Alabama, Georgia, or Ohio State's dominance in the sport. Ohio State has been dominating the Big Ten East for the most part. So who's to say? Have they won a national championship in a little? It's been a minute, right?
Been a minute.
Ohio State, they've dominated the recruiting trail in a way that 99.9% of the sport has not. But have they won a national championship since the inaugural college football playoff?
Been a minute.
Am I forgetting one?
It's been a minute. Yeah, it's been a while.
The Zeke Elliott over Oregon, just incredible performance, especially on that defense. Okay, I'm just wondering. Is there that program or programs that you say, okay, what Alabama is doing, obviously Texas A&M did it this past year, has not gotten it done on the field, hasn't gotten the results to cut into the on-field dominance. But certainly if a program could recruit like Texas A&M just did consistently, it seems like it would result in results. Who's that program? Who are those programs that you're like, okay, if this 1-3 grouping of teams were generating top three classes most years, we could see that taking a toll on Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, maybe to a lesser extent, Clemson.
Yeah, it's a tricky question for two reasons. The first is that this team, this group of teams, in order to be eligible for the answer of this question, must have underperformed on some level over the last decade or so, right? That's how I read it. And then secondly, the team at least has to be in some strategic region so that it could affect a Georgia and Ohio State and Alabama. Those three programs, by the way, are somewhat unique in that they've grown to a level where they can truly recruit nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter where they're at. Obviously, if you're in the Southeast, that works to Georgia's favor. If you're in the Midwest, the Northeast, that works to Ohio State's favor. But these are programs that are recruiting from all over. It's not limited to any one corridor.
Right.
So for that reason, the most obvious answer for me was Florida State. Florida State's recruiting over the last 5 years. You got to go back about 5 years to find when they were on the cusp of being a top 10 program in terms of recruiting. Yeah. Outside of that, the last 4 years has basically been a top 20 program. Mm-hmm. On the recruiting trail. They would have done better last cycle if not for the Travis Hunter debacle, which we've covered extensively here on this show, and many others have covered
debacle.
On that.
Debacle. He went to where he wanted to go for whatever reason. That's okay.
Not a debacle for him, but there were many folks out there who were calling for Mike Norvell's head. So in whatever level of debauchery you want to kind of count that Travis Hunter thing.
Debauchery? I love that.
Wherever you want to put the Travis Hunter thing,
yeah,
it definitely did not work to Florida State's favor. So I think if they can, quote unquote, get it going, that could definitely eat into the dominance that Alabama's had recruiting the state of Florida, that Georgia's had recruiting the Southeast.
Sure.
Maybe Ohio State to some extent. I would also then broaden the scope of that answer and say really any of the teams in Florida, right? Miami. Sure. Miami's done fairly well early on here in the Crystal Ball era. If they can continue some of that momentum, perhaps it eats into the Alabama side of things, right? One of the things that we heard so much about with Alabama, as they have risen, Miami has kind of gone in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And one of the things the recruiting people will tell you is that Alabama built pipelines into South Florida. It ate directly into where Miami would usually recruit. And so maybe if Cristobal can rebuild some of those pipelines and steer some of those guys away from other programs, it can have some sort of knock-on effect. I would also throw Florida in there. Look, we've talked a lot about Billy Napier, how we like Billy Napier at Gainesville and why we think he can do well there.
Mm-hmm.
The recruiting last cycle wasn't great. Definitely could have been better. So if
Dan Mullen had some really good but not great classes, top 10-ish, but not necessarily every year. And unless you're stacking top 10, top 6 types classes, then it is difficult to make that dent.
It's difficult to make the dent. It's also difficult to truly include Florida as part of this answer because Florida, by and large, has been okay on the recruiting trail. It hasn't been a disaster. Mm-hmm. So I was really focused on Florida with this answer, if only because there is such a high concentration of D1 talent down there.
So I got a two-pronged answer. The easiest way to end or curtail the dominance of these types of programs on the field is for teams within their division or conference to be the ones attracting more and more talent. Because if Alabama goes 10-2, 11-1, and are clearly excellent, but are not winning the West, and yes, they've gotten to the playoff without winning their division, but it's harder. It's a more difficult path, as we saw last year with Ohio State. Ohio State lost once in the Big Ten, but they lost to the team that won the division. And even though they were of playoff caliber, especially on offense, mostly on offense, they weren't sniffing the playoff. So Michigan ascending, even though Michigan hasn't recruited in a way anywhere near Ohio State.
Interesting.
I mean, that's not fully fair. But yes, they've recruited well, but not cartoonishly well like Ohio State has. So the answer to me is, so like LSU, right? LSU has the ability to string together top 5 classes. If they can find that quarterback, like they sort of stumbled into with Joe Burrow, then all of a sudden it becomes increasingly difficult for both Georgia and Alabama to dominate the field and get to the playoff. LSU, because of, you know, the being in Louisiana, which per capita is one of the most intensely sought after states to find recruits, and also their access to East Texas and the Houston area, and they've raised their reputation nationally. Like, if you're a top DB, why wouldn't you consider LSU with what they've put into the league recently and over the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years? So LSU is one of those programs to me. Tennessee could potentially, especially if they are able to continue finding quarterbacks to run that sort of exciting type of offense, because as we're seeing, the teams that attract the best receivers tend to find themselves in those January situations, right? Mm-hmm. That they have those types of game breakers that no matter how well you scheme, if you can't stay in front of Devontae Smith, if you can't stay in front of Jermaine Burton, if you can't stay in front of Jerry Jeudy or whoever, doesn't matter. The other prong to this is probably USC, even though USC is not in the division or the conference of those schools, but because those schools have become reliant on plundering the West Coast for pieces, especially on offense. When you look at, you know, the best tight end in college football last year was from Napa, California, Brock Bowers, CJ Stroud, Bryce Young. Now, DJU didn't work out. Tua's from the West Coast footprint in Hawaii. And so when those schools are able to start filling in spots with West Coast talent, West Coast quarterbacks, and Ohio State going to, I think, the state of Washington, they've gotten receivers from there. The number one overall player, defensive lineman, JT Tuamalu, is from Washington. That when those schools are able to go into the backyard of USC, Oregon, Washington, Stanford, Arizona State, whoever, Bijan Robinson's from Arizona. Like, there's all sorts of examples of these schools from elsewhere coming to the West Coast in a way that they traditionally hadn't when either USC, UCLA, Oregon, whoever, was able to keep those guys within the footprint. So USC rising to the occasion and keeping CJ Stroud home, Bryce Young home. He was committed to USC at a certain time. Now, Malachi Nelson is the current five-star that's committed to USC that otherwise in the Clay Helton era may have committed to and may have been committed to Oklahoma, right? And to a school not in that footprint. So those are the types of schools that I think a lot is dependent on the Pac-12. This is a hypothetical. Establishing itself as a big time college football conference.
Right. I feel like we've been talking about that possibility for 10 years.
Right. And it was, who was it that there's a running back? I think it's Kendall Milton from Northern California, Najee Harris from Northern California. That, how do you blame any of these guys for going to the SEC, ACC, Big Ten when the stage is under much brighter lights and there's just so much more attention? So you can't blame them for leaving, but if Dan Lanning does the job, if Lincoln Riley does the job that they should be doing in terms of recruiting the West Coast, that will eat into some of the gains that those types of schools that can sort of have their choice of guys for the most part, no matter where they are in the country. So that would be my, like, that's my two-pronged answer. It's LSU, Tennessee, USC, maybe to a lesser extent Oregon, just because it's more difficult to attract guys to Eugene than it is to LA. But like, Texas has recruited super well.
Well, and that's why I didn't include USC, frankly, because USC has not especially had what I would consider a recruiting problem. Maybe they've recruited the wrong types of guys, and talent development has been a big issue. But sure. I think what you're describing is taking recruiting to a different stratosphere. And that's seemingly what Lincoln Riley has started to do. We'll see if that trend can continue.
Yeah. No, and it really is eating into the dominance along the lines of scrimmage. Ohio State and Alabama, Georgia have done such a good job recruiting offensive and defensive linemen, and you're just not going to get that in the West Coast footprint. But if LSU starts bringing in more guys, Tennessee again is the other name, Texas A&M has started to do that. It was top 5 to 10 type classes until last year, and so you start stringing those types of classes together. Yeah, A&M beat Alabama with a roster that won't be as good as it will be in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
So that's a good sign. A&M needs to find that quarterback, develop that quarterback, and let that quarterback shine in what I would argue is a better and more productive offensive system than where they've been these past few years under Jimbo. But yeah, that's the obvious answer, that if the Aggies can fulfill the promise of their roster, that's the most obvious short-term answer.
Okay.
But in terms of stacking those classes year over year, I think there are a few.
Yeah, I mean, the other way to fill in the blank is to say if NIL can really get going on the recruiting trail,
sure,
that could cut into Bama, Georgia, Ohio State.
I've got an interesting answer, auxiliary, not as obvious. What about Michigan State? Because Mel Tucker has been an aggressor, both in recruiting high school talent and in the portal, where I don't think they will supplant Ohio State if things continue going the direction that they are. But if you'll remember, the best of Michigan State, playoff program, albeit briefly, was a major, major thorn, a sharp, aggressive thorn in Ohio State's side under Urban Meyer.
Yeah. Well, I was just reading an article before we hit record on Jarek Broussard.
Yep.
And perhaps what he could mean to the Spartan program. I think there is real value in a program, maybe not rising up to be playoff caliber, but recruiting well enough and being coached well enough to be a true thorn in the side, that sharp, prickly thorn.
A Peyton thorn?
Oh, boy.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I'm printing that one. Hold on. I'm printing out that one, that goof out loud, just to put it on my wall for later. Continue.
I think there's real value in being that thorn in the side of, especially in the Big Ten East, where you've got Penn State, you've got Ohio State, you've got Michigan, all vying to be that next team up, to rise up on the national level, let's say, and be a real serious contender for the championship. Michigan State could potentially be that team that is the fly in the ointment, the thorn in the side that prevents it all from happening. And over the course of time, Dan, that could have an effect too.
Yeah.
That can have an effect on the recruiting trail as well. All right. Next question.
By the way, my answer would have included Penn State. had we not already seen James Franklin recruit on a high level and not put a dent in Ohio State's postseason aspirations all that often.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. We've tried to see that happen, but it has not. Okay. Next question. Who is the most dude alert? I don't have it. The sound. Who is the most dude alert player in solid verbal history?
Wow. I do not have it on the soundboard at the moment, and I feel a sense of shame, honestly, for not having it, but it is the off season. Oh, wait, no, hold on. I do. Hold on.
Do you?
I think I do. Tied in right in the middle of my soundboard. I apologize to one and all. Most dude alert. So we give dude alerts out during the season after particularly amazing individual performances.
Yes.
And after a long time of doing this show, we developed the sound for it because we felt we just needed to give awards for these types of performances that just bring us to our feet. Over the course of time, if you get enough dude alerts, we just retire you from being a dude. Now you can't get too many dude alerts. We need to start paving the way for other folks. So you're the one who puts the list together.
True.
And so I sort of defer to you on this one. I have some names, obviously, that come to mind, but who really stands out to you in the dude alert category?
Okay, so there are a couple of positions that I put at a higher level of individual excellence than other positions. And that's basically a pass rusher or a wide receiver. Running backs have the ability, like we can look at Mel Gore, who is sensational, but they have the ability to change games and put up a ton of yardage, but some of them are advantaged in ways that others aren't. That, like, if you're running in a Wisconsin system or what was Stanford system, well, successful version of Stanford system, like, I would argue the two most, not unstoppable, but impressive performers, like Christian McCaffrey, because he was all everything, like Reggie Bush predates Dude Alert. So I can't. He predates the solid verbal. Like Christian McCaffrey, especially the way he finished his career against Iowa in the all-purpose way, where like anytime he touches the ball, like you should be holding your breath. Like Iowa didn't touch him the first half of that Rose Bowl. A good, good Iowa defense. Shout out, was it Josie Jewell? I don't know. In that linebacking core. Devontae Smith is another one where when you watch that player, like you can talk about Aiden Hutchinson and Jadeveon Clowney and guys who are just unstoppable, no matter, like, the other pass rusher, by the way, is, now I'm totally blanking on his name, can completely picture him, the Ohio State defensive end, Chase Young.
Yep.
Where at the start of every game, Kirk Herbstreit or Joel Klatt waxes poetic about how the other team's offense has to completely change the way that they game plan because of this single game wrecker.
Yeah.
So Chase Young falls under that like all-time dude list. What Devontae Smith did in saying you can call any type of coverage, you can put your best corner, you can have a safety over the top, and we'll just get it to me on an end around, and oh, it went for 83. That type of thing is what separates him from other excellent receivers, that there's just nothing you can do. Like maybe Tavon Austin when he lined up at running back in a pinch against Oklahoma in a losing effort. There are guys like that. But that type of, there's nothing you can do, including double teams, to stop what we have with this player. That to me is the essence of dutiness.
The essence of dutiness. I was thinking of Scooby Wright. I don't know if that was before the day and age of dude alerts, but Scooby Wright was a name that
probably before
that I know we talked an awful lot about.
Mm-hmm.
We developed the whole sound for Nick Foles in a losing effort. I feel like that also predates our dude alert segment. Nick Foles surely would have been a dude in that segment if not for the fact that he lost every game and then we had a separate sound for him back in 2011, whenever that was.
Right.
So I agree with you that there are some positions that stand out a little bit more than others. And I defer to your judgment here because you are the one putting the list together on a weekly basis.
Shout out Suburban Legends for that clip. An all-time legendary Orange County ska band. When the ability to shine through double teams, when you look at the end of the season and a defensive tackle has 33 tackles for a loss, you're like, oh, Ndamukong Suh is different.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald is different. And so that to me, like Nick Fairley, when he was shining for Auburn. Now it predates the sound that we used and the awards that the weekly awards that we give at the end of our recap shows. But yeah, the ability to shine no matter how many talented players are thrown at him separates the dudes from the merely great running back, great receiver, great edge rusher, whatever. Like Aiden Hutchinson flashed all-time dutiness excellence last year.
Yeah.
That's all.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, next topic.
Next question. Ty, which freshman or newcomer are you most excited to watch this fall? Could be a freshman, a transfer, or someone who hasn't played much yet.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple different ways you could go with this. This is Chris, I believe, from Patreon. There are so many different ways that you can answer this question. Mm-hmm. He says freshman, newcomer, transfer, really could be anybody.
Yeah.
Could be anybody. I'm interested in the Quinn Ewers thing.
Okay.
Quinn Ewers isn't under the radar by any stretch. That's partially by design, but we just haven't seen any actual gameplay from him yet. And can he be the guy who elevates the Sark offense to a different level and finally gets Texas to what we would consider quote unquote back?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Sure.
I don't know. Personally, I'm interested in Tyler Buckner, the real TB12, as you and I have started referring to him on our Slack chat. Buckner, we didn't see a whole lot of him. I think the bits and pieces we did, for me as a Notre Dame fan, were frustrating because I know he can do more than just run.
Right.
This season, it's his team. This season, we'll find out what Buckner is made out of. And hopefully he can stay healthy, and hopefully we can see that true dual threat nature to his game.
Yeah.
And what Tommy Rees and unfettered Tommy Rees can do with that remains to be seen. Other names that jump out to me, I am a little bit selfish with the answer to this question. Nicholas Singleton for Penn State.
Right.
The heralded running back out of Reading, PA, the five-star. Penn State's running game has been truly awful the last two seasons. And it is painful to watch that occur, if only because in recent memory, we've got the Saquon Barkley era.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that was probably Saquon's individual brilliance overcoming some shortcomings on the offensive line. But it's hard to go from watching Saquon to watching what Penn State's been as a pure rushing team over the last couple seasons. Can Singleton do that? Can Singleton do the Saquon stuff? Probably not, but he's a pretty gifted runner. He can get north and south pretty quickly. And if any of what he did in high school translates to the college game, that could be a really exciting moment for Penn State football in that offense. They've already got Sean Clifford. Yeah. It's going to be year two of Mike Yurcich. Let's see what they can do with a bona fide five-star running back in Nick Singleton. Other names. Right. Other names.
I've got a lot. I mean, Caleb Williams at USC with the receive, throwing to Mario Williams and Jordan Addison.
Sure.
No excuse. Like, look, USC's offensive line will only be, well, we'll probably be fine, but nothing crazy. It's not what Oklahoma's was for all those years. I'm curious about the freshman quarterbacks who are already going to be the most popular players on the team behind Sean Clifford and DJ Uiagalelei. So you got Drew Allar at Penn State, who physically looks the part, right? He's a bigger dude.
Yeah.
I believe, right? Yeah, taller, bigger. And then Cade Klubnik at Clemson, because they're already like, yeah, if he's good, yeah, quickly, if DJU isn't, will that conversation start to happen? So those are some. I'm curious about the eventual deep rotation of Texas A&M's defensive line. You know, Walter Nolan and the guys like that who came in and are immediately going to be pretty dangerous as far as I can tell. DJ Durkin's defense as he replaces Mike Elko. There have been quarterback transfers all over. I mean, Dylan Gabriel at Oklahoma. It's a fun system that Jeff Lebby runs. The depth of receiver and offensive skill talent isn't there to me the way it has been these past years, which is okay, but I think he's talented enough and, you know, what he can do in bombing it downfield and has the experience with Jeff Lebby, which I think makes it interesting enough. I mean, those are headline type programs and the headline type players at those programs. Here's another name, just in terms of younger quarterbacks pushing entrenched starters. What about J.J. McCarthy at Michigan?
The legend of J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, there's a lot around the sport this year that's just low key. Well, if this guy doesn't really improve, who's the probable starter? Like, I don't know. There's somebody behind him who we can have a conversation about in week five. There's a lot of that within the sport this year, very quietly. And some of it's already like shaken out with like Blake Shapen taking over for Bohannon, even though Bohannon was the entrenched starter, but Shapen looked good in his limited time at Baylor when Bohannon was hurt. There's a lot of that around the sport. Like, we got an email that was like, hey guys, just so you know, Garrett Nussmeier is going to be the guy at LSU. Great. That's a name I'm interested in all of a sudden. Has one of the probable, what, 3 to 5 best receivers in the game in Kayshawn Boutte. Like, it's all over the place that we have these just very quiet quarterback, not battles, but somebody waiting in the wings that has people more intrigued. I mean, it's the old, you know, is the backup better than the starter kind of thing. There's a lot of that this year.
Yeah, oh yeah. Did you mention Evan Stewart for A&M? The wideout?
No. I mean, yeah, he's for sure a new name that
he's,
you know, freshman receivers can be tricky, but yes.
I think he's the real deal. And I think if as good as advertised, he could help take that offense to another level. Just his ability to get downfield is really exciting. I'm also excited to see Bo Nix. I never thought I'd say that.
You don't mean that. And
I
it's
do
unfair.
Mean it.
You are fronting for the Verballers. Right
I am now. Not fronting. I
yes,
am genuinely excited to see what that looks like, because it always felt like a weird transfer to me. I understand the connection to Kenny Dillingham, but to go from Auburn, where he's a legacy and everybody liked him, to Oregon, a place where nobody knows him. He's not familiar. And he's just following a coach that coached him up to some degree his freshman year.
Right.
I'm genuinely excited to see what that looks like, because I don't know what the Oregon offense looks like. And Bo Nix is like the poster child for it in whatever incarnation it takes on.
What about Spencer Rattler?
Sure. Yeah. Great answer.
I'm not as excited for that.
Me neither.
I'm just Rattler stock is low right now, but certainly better than where they were at quarterback last year. It's in general. It's the theme of this year, and it will probably be a theme moving forward, is there are so many quarterbacks on the move. How quickly can they gel with coordinators, receivers, head coaches, new places, dealing with off-field drama? Because the more you move around, the further you are from your friends, your, you know, whoever you're dating, your family, whatever. Like, there are more human changes to these quarterbacks moving around. The low-key name I'm interested in is Cameron Ward. At Wazoo.
My boy.
Because that just doesn't work. The FCS to FBS, and Vernon Adams at least had the experience. He's like the lone success story. That to me is interesting because
you know I'm going to die on that hill. You know I'm all in on Cameron Ward.
Wazoo is a very much boomer bust school.
I know.
They make that borderline emotional decision to keep with Jake Dickert after, you know, he's able to navigate them in the wake of everything that happened off the field with Nick Rolovich. If he's as special as he was at a lower level, if he shows the flashes of brilliance, that's interesting.
I spent 2 weeks in the later half of December watching every Cameron Ward video on YouTube.
I remember.
I'm all in.
Yeah.
Come hell or high water, I'm all in.
Yeah, I hope Sam Houston State is on Wazoo's schedule for like 7 straight weeks.
Next question.
All right. Next question. What is something you've changed your mind about with regard to college football since you first started covering the sport? That's from Tiger Chant.
Tiger Chant.
What's something you've changed your mind about with college football? I know you've mentioned the scholarship thing before, that was a suitable enough reward
for
making it to big-time college football.
That's my answer, and I am going to use it again here because I think it's worthy of repeating it.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised by a first grade teacher
mm-hmm.
who taught me that education is everything, and that mm-hmm. Very much played into the whole scholar. I'm quoting here, air quotes for the non-visual medium, that the scholarship should quote unquote be enough.
Right.
And I still believe that education is everything. It's important. Right. It is something that should be emphasized, especially if we're going to continue calling this college football.
Yeah, I fully disagree. Continue.
However, I do think the mindset, the scholarship is everything mindset, is antiquated and too simplistic in today's day and age.
Yeah, of course.
And the moment for me did not come while doing this podcast. It came when a good friend of mine was a walk-on kicker at Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
And his quote to me was, they own me. This is Robbie Gould era Penn State.
Okay.
A walk-on kicker doing his best and trying to get some sort of face time, some sort of playing time, be it as a kickoff specialist, as an onside kick specialist, just anything, trying to carve out his little spot on the roster. And even for a walk-on fledgling, never going to play kicker, they owned him.
Yeah.
And what he went through to be part of the football program was all consuming. There was no time for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Not the least of which was class.
Right.
And so that really changed my perspective on things. And the lengths to which even no name will never play talent has to go through to try and mm-hmm. be part of the college football experience. It just seemed to me like maybe education isn't everything here.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there needs to be something that can help give these players a little bit more for their efforts.
Yep.
And that seed has been growing for a while now. And certainly as we've done this podcast, and now we've arrived at this NIL era. Mm-hmm. It's now a fully blooming tree of just pay the damn players.
I'm trying to figure out an example of something, a topic about which I've been wrong over the years. And I just keep coming back to, like, I'm just nailing everything over and over, Ty. I'm just nailing it over and over. I've been wrong about a ton of head coaching hires for sure that I thought were going to work out. But with regard to the sport itself, there's not much. There's not much that has been dramatic. So I've always been a proponent of, like, they're making a lot of money, these schools. I'm trying to think. What is there that I've changed my mind about dramatically? Okay, I've done an about turn, obviously. I've been vocal about my thoughts on the postseason. I was pro playoff. I was all about, like, let's move to a playoff. Let's get 8 teams or 12 teams or 16 teams. Let's settle things on the field. It's so frustrating that we can have these situations. We can have a split national champion. We can have the AP give it to USC and the BCS give it to LSU, whatever. That's ridiculous. That is a ridiculous thing for a major sport to do. And I still feel that way. I think split national champions are ridiculous. But I was positive the playoff was going to be awesome for college football. I was positive it was going to, on a competitive plane, make things more interesting with more access for teams, and it has made the sport so much worse from afar. Like, on any given week seven that, you know, Minnesota's playing Iowa or Oregon's playing UC, like, that's still great. Like, the actual games are amazing. The actual experience is incredible. The other thing that I've changed on, and I think it's sort of overrated and underrated. I think because the way I started my career after college, going to games and going to tailgates, that I think my opinion that going to college football games was great has gotten worse. Like, I am so much less inclined to figure out how to get to a game. And now I live where I live and I've moved all over, and I was in New York and LA, and there's just not a lot of big college football games within driving distance of those places. But I thought going to games was the end all be all. I think going to tailgates remains, I think going to the place of the game remains the greatest thing in the world.
Well,
eating food with your friends and family and watching games on TV, whatever. I loved going to games. And the last few games I've been to, granted, have been bowl games and, you know, campus sites and stuff like that. It's not a good experience.
So I'm glad you bring that up.
It's not.
I'm glad you bring that up, because the second part of his question was, what's the most underrated part of college football?
Yeah.
And the most underrated part of college football is a tradition, bar none.
Yeah.
All right. It's the texture that makes college football. It's a tie that binds everybody who roots for the sport.
Right.
I had a very interesting conversation with a friend, a mutual friend of ours, Larry, who listens to the show.
Yeah.
And we were talking about Ohio State, he's a big Ohio State fan. And he said his comment to me was about tradition. I would rather go to an Ohio State game and experience all the traditions,
mm-hmm.
right? The band on the field, all the pregame yeah. stuff, all the traditions that go with Ohio State football.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather take that experience than an experience that is void of all the tradition.
Of course.
Right. I would take the tradition a million times out of a million over mm-hmm. just going to see a sterile Ohio State Michigan game.
Right.
And I've been thinking about that ever since he mentioned it. And I think he's right. Tradition is truly what makes a sport unique. What
yeah.
is the what remains, even though everybody knows about it, the most underrated component of college football. And if you don't believe me, go watch to the NFL or go to an NFL game and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Each
yeah.
team may have, the Eagles may have their Fly Eagles Fly chant. It may be a very hostile and
get the Bills Mafia jumping through tables.
I mean,
sure.
every team has their thing.
Yeah.
But none of those pro teams is college. None of yeah. them have the college football experience in the way that we are privileged to have it here at the Solid Verbal and as college football fans at large.
I agree. The worst part of going to a college football game is probably the experience of watching the football game, because of how slow the game appears to be in person and the TV timeouts. And God, is there anything worse than seeing the TV ref on the field with the big neon orange wristband
and,
or whatever?
And somebody, I just hit my table, somebody yeah. who follows media and how the commercial structure and all that stuff would probably tell me I'm wrong about this.
Yeah.
There got to be more commercials at NFL games, aren't there? I've been to NFL games.
Well,
it feels like there's twice as many.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is that college games take longer because of the way the clock stoppage rules are different
sure.
in college and the NFL. So there's that element to things. But everything about going to a college football game in person is incredible, except for the football experience at times. It's just a better TV sport than it is an in-person sport. Now, watching a game with other fans is the best. Celebrating with other fans or being nervous with other fans and complete strangers around you, that's incredible. Tailgating, the best of the best. All of the traditions, the band, the, you know, the sayings, you know, at Autzen Stadium, they say it never rains at Autzen Stadium, blah, blah, blah. It's liquid sunshine. All that stuff is corny and cheesy and the best. The pain of getting to games and parking and waiting in line with tickets or waiting in line for the bathroom, that's where it takes a hit. That, you know, stadium
yeah.
experience has not. I don't care about Wi-Fi that much. I've changed on that. It's fine. Watch a football game. Hang out with your people. But if you need to call an Uber, but if you need to, like, you know, actually use your phone to call AAA because, as I've done, left your battery on accidentally in the parking lot, it's nice to have internet access. But yeah, that to me is the underrated part of going to college football games is, or the underrated part of college football is forever going to be everything that surrounds the sport, because you can never properly rate it. It's the best. And anything short of that is not doing it justice.
Next question.
Next question?
Yeah, next.
All right, these have all been from Verballers. Colin, if you could choose any team beside your own for everything to go, quote, right for, who would it be?
Okay.
I know your answer's Texas.
No, it isn't.
Oh, okay.
It isn't Texas. That would be the obvious answer for me. So
yeah.
He said outside of your team, so I'm going to strike from the record any Notre Dame or Penn State stuff.
Yep.
Tennessee winning the SEC.
Oh, God.
Tennessee winning the SEC would cause a lot of soul searching among the current powers in that conference.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That would be fun, I think.
Yeah.
Fun to cover. I'm maybe coming at this from a different perspective as somebody who runs a national podcast, but I think that would make for very interesting storylines.
I mean, you're asking about the missing piece to an entertaining season, essentially.
Nebraska, if only because we kind of feel like everything went wrong last year. So what happens if it goes right? Do they win the West? Do they contend? I still don't think they contend, but
right.
I think if only because the universe was very cruel to the Cornhuskers last season,
right.
I would very much like to see what happens if it all goes right. That's another answer for me. Everything going right for BYU this season means that there is another uncomfortable group of five / independent playoff conversation. And I'm always game for those. You know this.
Mm-hmm.
It also probably means they beat Notre Dame, which I'm not down for. But if a result of BYU beating Notre Dame is that we've got that uncomfortable playoff discussion, I'm okay with it, I think.
Okay.
I'm okay with it. At least they lost to a playoff team. Hey.
Right.
And then the other one is my pet team of the year, which is Texas Tech.
I was going to say, continue. Yeah.
It's Texas Tech. Everything, quote unquote, going right for the Red Raiders probably means like 8-4.
Sure.
But it's a fun as hell 8-4, isn't it?
You want competent thorns in the sport.
I do. So 8-4, everything, quote unquote, going right for the Red Raiders. That's a fun as hell season for us to cover. Those are my four answers just off the bat. What about you?
I want Virginia Tech to strike gold with Brent Pry. And
okay.
His apparent alleged massive hog. Alleged. Right.
Of course.
Per Message Board Genius's post. There's something about Virginia Tech that there seems to be a void in the ACC. All due respect to North Carolina, basketball school. All due respect to NC State. And the ACC is a basketball conference, traditionally speaking. But that brings some balance into the college football universe within that conference, especially, that we haven't had. And you can, and they fall under that, like, look, they're not going to win 11 games, but a full on good Virginia Tech team this year, whatever that means, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting for the conference. That's interesting for a conference desperate for a good defense. That would be my answer, at least within the ACC. We can have a Florida State conversation as well. I'm not desperate for Florida State to be amazing, whatever. Within the SEC, I think Tennessee's a good answer. I also would, within the ACC, Louisville, just because they have a quarterback I like and they're recruiting on a high level. I think, you know, Adidas is getting very involved with NIL, that kind of thing. So that would be really nice. I think Texas Tech is the answer. Maybe TCU within the Big 12, because that means Sonny Dykes' system and quarterback development in the short term got nailed.
Yeah.
Absolutely got nailed in Fort Worth. So I'm good with that. I think UCLA would provide some balance. We talked about having talent not leave the West Coast and the Pac-12 do more to establish itself via teams actually being good as a big-time conference. UCLA being really good, even though they went, 8-4 last year with a really good offense. Chip Kelly's that known quantity within the sport, and UCLA's that known. I mean, basketball school again. I think that would be an answer that would bring balance and a missing piece to the sport. So that, I just would like it to happen because I grew up a UCLA fan in Southern California, and it would be cool to see it come full circle with the coach that was formative to my college football enjoyment. Otherwise, I don't know. I have a soft spot for a number of these West Coast teams just because it's where I'm from. I think that's kind of it with the teams that you mentioned as well. I think those were all good answers. So,
all right. Yeah. Good answer. Next question.
Good answer.
Next question.
Next question. Kansas State, top three Big 12 finish.
Ooh.
Thomas wants to know.
Tom, going for it here. Okay.
Yeah.
We had Bill on, Bill Connolly from ESPN. I believe in passing, he mentioned that Kansas State is either a top 15 caliber team or at least has a top 15 caliber defense.
Yeah, potential. He liked the defense especially, and, you know, they have the most intriguing physical running back in the sport in Deuce Vaughn. So there's fun things about both sides of the ball here.
I like K-State. I'm rooting for K-State. I really like Chris Klieman. The problem that I have with K-State this year is I don't like the schedule. I don't like the schedule at all. They're at Oklahoma. They've got the sandwich game after Oklahoma coming back home against Texas Tech, which there's our Forrest Gump team of the year.
Yeah.
Who knows what to expect there. They go to Iowa State. They go to TCU. They go to Baylor. And then, you know, to top it all off, they go to West Virginia, which is not an easy place to play by any stretch of the imagination. The stretch of games for K-State between the end of September and the middle of November, for my money, is among the most brutal in the Big 12. And so I don't care how good the team is, how good the defense is, how good Adrian Martinez ends up being. I'm really spooked by that schedule. Top 15, I don't think top 15, but I think they're probably good enough to be ranked at the end of the season. They're probably good enough to go 8-4 amid that schedule, but I just think it's going to be so tough.
If they're good, I know you said you didn't care if they're good or you don't care how good they are.
I don't care how much talent they have. Let me put it to you that way. I think it will be difficult to have a good record, a 9-3 record, let's say, with the kind of schedule that they've got in front of them. It just keeps
coming. I'm pulling it up right now.
Yeah. I mean, I could read it off to you. It starts fine.
I'm a visual person. I need it. Oh, I click Kennesaw State. God. Kennesaw State has the SEO on KSU? Woof. Woof.
It starts South Dakota, Missouri, second week of the year.
Yep.
And Tulane. And then they go right into the Big 12 stuff. At Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Iowa State on the road. Then an off week. Then at TCU, home against Oklahoma State, home against Texas. Next week at Baylor, they close out the season. At West Virginia, home against Kansas. That's not an easy slate.
No, but it's a good year. You talk about it's a difficult schedule. It's a good year to have a difficult looking schedule in the summer, because you're saying Iowa State and TCU and Oklahoma State and Texas and Baylor in a row appears to be difficult. But the floor for some of those teams also is something that's a bit of an unknown. Like, we never thought TCU's defense could look as bad as it did last year. So even if TCU's defense improves, which it
But look, you're cherry picking. You're cherry picking.
No, I am cherry picking.
Cherry
what I'm
picking.
Saying is,
I don't even have TCU highlighted on our spreadsheet.
No, I know, but I'm saying just because they play them in a row. They have TCU, Oklahoma State, Texas, Baylor in a row. What I'm saying is, it's kind of a wide open Big 12, and
it
Bill
is.
Connolly's point was top 15 potential, not top 15 caliber. And so because of the nature of the combination of new quarterbacks and new coaches and new systems on both sides of the ball, and like, are you high on the JT Daniels, Graham Harrell pairing without any real game-changing type receiver? I'm not.
No.
And Graham Harrell had game-changing receivers at USC, and like, that's what we saw from their offense. He had five-star quarterbacks with game-changing receivers. It wasn't an especially fun offense until they decided to throw everything to Drake London. And even still, they didn't win games. So that doesn't do much for me. I'm just saying the continuity of having Chris Klieman in year, whatever it is, year three, year four, something like that, against so much change in that conference. Like, Oklahoma State's defense is going to take a step back. Texas's defense is still probably going to be average at best. That you talk about not a wounder's row, as we mentioned on our schedule preview string of episodes. I don't know, man. A good Kansas State team can go 9-3. I'm saying there is it's a toss up right now for top three within the Big 12. Absolutely.
All right.
Opportunity. It's an opportunity truck situation. So they might just be top three by by proxy by way of all of those teams hitting walls in week 8, that they just happen to find themselves right there because they're a little bit more consistent than everybody. Now, the word consistent in Adrian Martinez in the same thought exercise, not ideal, but still, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with a good Kansas State team going 9-3, especially with their association with Colin Klein. I'm good with it.
Next question.
We'll do a couple more football before going into non-football questions. With Cincinnati, we'll say Big 12. With Cincinnati, BYU, Houston, and UCF joining the Big 12 next summer, what's something about the current Big 12 that's on your bucket list before it potentially goes away next season? I don't know exactly what the allusion of bucket list is because I'm not going to a Big 12 game.
No, well,
at the moment.
And,
yeah.
And I'm going to change this question. I appreciate
what's something that's lost with this?
Well, let me change the question a little bit.
Okay.
My answer to this question is Texas or Oklahoma winning the Big 12. And here is why that's my answer.
Yes.
It is not on my bucket list. I don't care.
Yeah.
I just assume K-State win the Big 12.
Yeah.
That'd be more interesting for us here on the show.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it should be on every Texas and Oklahoma fan's bucket list is because when they go to the SEC, it may never happen again. You may not win the SEC. You may not get to the playoff until they expand to 16 or 100 or whatever they're going to eventually end up doing. So you're getting while it's good now. Because when you go to the SEC, it's going to be a lot harder to make it through that field and give yourself an opportunity to win a national championship. That makes sense?
No, that makes sense. My answer is basically, and every program has this, where you have your rivals, you have your Red River, right? You have your Farmageddon, you have your whatever. There's always, you know, the rivalry. That's a given. The thing that's lost with so many teams moving around and realignment is it's not even second tier. It's almost a third tier rivalry. We always have trouble with, right? Texas, we always have trouble with Kansas State. Oklahoma, we've always got trouble with Iowa State. And there it's the fabric of a season where, like, as an Oregon fan, I have that team in my mind. With a Notre Dame fan, you have that team in your mind, probably in a different way. With Penn State, you definitely, like, Iowa is not a rival of Penn State. But, buddy, Iowa and Penn State always give each other a lot of fits.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's, you have that history that grows over time where you're stringing together these 7 games, these 11 games of like, oh man, remember the Michael Robinson thing against this team. Remember the Matt McGloin thing against this team. And so in the case of the Big 12, it's remembering those weird games between teams. Like, for example, like if Oklahoma State were to leave, if it were the Pac-16, right? If Oklahoma State were to leave, then you lose that weird bond between Oklahoma State and Iowa State and the upset from 2011, right? So what you're doing is you're shattering these very thin but still meaningful connections throughout a conference. And so that's what you lose. And look, we'll get new ones for as long as Cincinnati, UCF, BYU, and Houston are in the conference. But it takes a long time to develop that type of scar tissue, I think, is super valuable within college football. And I have that for Oregon, like Oregon and the Arizona schools, not rivals, very little in the way of connection, but like Dennis Dixon tore his ACL in the desert, Kellen Clemens and what he was able to do got hurt in the desert. And Oregon has always had those weird games against the Arizona schools. Now, if there's some sort of super conference and Oregon is no longer playing those schools, it's okay, but you lose the scar tissue. And I think that is the like underrated part of the sport. All of the wounds that we've amassed as fans over the years or given over the years.
So much
baggage.
And so
when you lose and everybody is throwing everything at Oklahoma and everybody's throwing everything at Texas. So that you upsetting one of those schools when they're at their best, now that means less, now that you're no longer associated with those programs, I think that kind of sucks. So I am treasuring the last of those matchups. I'm treasuring the last of Texas, Kansas State, you know, the last of TCU completely owning Texas over this last decade, treasuring the last of like weird Oklahoma possibly losing to Kansas, or any, either of those teams possibly or definitely losing to Kansas. That to me is like that shared history is what I'm going to cherish these next couple of years or whatever.
We also don't know exactly when this is going to happen.
That's true.
When this move away, we may get the final two books of Game of Thrones before this happens. We have no idea when, in fact, these two programs are going to go to the SEC.
By the way, who else is Penn State's scar tissue other than Iowa? Because Iowa's at least like a really, really good program. Like, who is Penn State's? We always have trouble.
Well, there's Minnesota scar tissue dating back to 1999, whenever that was. There is certainly scar tissue on the Ohio State side because I feel like they've been close.
But I'm talking like C-tier rival.
Yeah.
Like, even though they're not good, there's always something tricky about them.
They've had some...
And Minnesota's a pretty good answer.
Yeah, Minnesota's up there. Obviously, the Iowa one is probably the one that comes to mind first and foremost. There were some games against Northwestern. There have been some games there. I don't know if it rises to the level of scar tissue.
Yeah, but we would be losing something as a sport if we didn't... Like, if we were to go back and watch Saquon leaping over an Iowa defender, I mean, like... The clash of those two helmets no longer exists. That's a bummer.
Here's our final football question before we do one non-football question and then do the rest of this show for our Patreon Verballers over at Verballers.com.
Okay.
This question from Todd. If Texas goes 5-7 or worse, will Sark get the boot?
Man, I don't believe so.
Will he get the boot? I love that we're asking this question.
So... Sark in year two going 5-7, I think would get the benefit of go make some wholesale changes to your coordinators and assistants, unless there is something specific about Sark and the culture of the Texas program, like guys just quit on him, have no interest in playing for him, see through him in some sort of meaningful way that like this guy is a fraud on some level that is irreparable. Because that is always on the table for anybody getting fired prematurely. That there is basically a zero confidence situation that can't get repaired. So if that's why they go 5-7, that they start the season 4-1 with a win over Bama or 5-0 with a win over Bama and completely collapse because of something interpersonal that Sark is directly involved in, then yes, it's on the table, especially if that interpersonal thing means that they don't have to pay Sark a buyout. So yes, if there's a Bobby Petrino situation, anybody's, you know, able to be relieved of their duties. But short of that, short of Texas just being inconsistent and not making the types of defensive changes that they need to make and are not tackling better and are making the same mistakes that they did last year and that they're scoring, you know, 21 in the first half and zero in the second half, I think he would get another year to change assistance and strategy and maybe lose some of his responsibilities and turn them over to whoever on offense. I don't know. But yeah, I think you really have to stretch to find a 5-7 2023 Texas team. And for that reason, I'm going to say I don't think this question is based in a lot of reality.
Coaching changes are a lot like selling your house.
Okay. I'm listening.
Ideally, you want to move on to a better situation.
Right.
But what is that better situation? And what is the market?
Right.
The market last year was insane. And per my knowledge of the current housing market, it is also insane.
Yeah. I mean, right. it's slowing down a little bit.
If you sell your house, you now have the trouble of trying to find a new one. But that's basically the same situation here for Texas. Are you shopping in the Dave Aranda neighborhood?
Is Dave Aranda shopping in Austin?
Are you shopping in the Deion Sanders, the Josh Heupel neighborhood? Right. Like, I have no idea who would the better option, what would the better neighborhood be for the Texas Longhorns at this point, because so many of the big name guys have already been poached, have already gone elsewhere. What we saw last year was definitely atypical on the coaching carousel, right? We always see movement. We don't generally see that much high profile movement. If you're Texas, presumably you're not looking to downsize. You're looking to upsize. You're looking to revitalize the program and take it back to former glory. I just don't know who that person would be if not Steve Sarkisian. Who would you go out and get?
It almost doesn't matter when you have that kind of stupid money. That if you fully believe that you can throw money at this problem and solve it, which Texas has a reputation of trying to do with the biggest of names. Now, coaches are becoming more and more hip to the issues Texas has behind the scenes. And so, yeah, do I want to make $12 million at Texas and deal with a whole boatload of crap? Or am I good with making 9.2 at LSU or Oregon or USC or Notre Dame? Like, that's the thing. Like, if Texas is a disaster this year and Notre Dame goes 10-2 or 11-1 and Marcus Freeman's this young up-and-comer and Texas is like, they identify him as like, he's the guy we want to, and they throw $14 million at Marcus Freeman. I think Marcus Freeman's smart enough to know there's a reason why Texas has to pay a premium, and he's probably got it pretty good there. So that to me is the issue, that if Texas is going 5-7, if Texas is missing bowl games for consecutive years, that a lot of smart people are going to look at that job and say, yeah, there's a ton of potential there, but the reasons why they're not fulfilling that potential persist.
If and Texas so, goes 5-7, are we talking about an Urban Meyer conversation?
Sure. I think it's stupid too, but there will be factions that do. Yeah.
That's the name that comes to mind if they go 5-7.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's radioactive, but...
I would agree.
Yeah.
But the Marcus Freeman thing also speaks to something that has plagued a lot of other coaching hires, in that you're working with a very limited sample size and you're paying a lot of money.
Sure. Oh, man. I just don't see it, but that's me. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Hold on. We've got one more
portion. Do you want to go not one non-college football before we leave?
Let's stick with Todd. Okay. Here's our non-college football question.
All right.
It is a taste, no pun intended, of what's to come. If you go on over to verballers.com and sign up now.
Yes.
Is cheese pizza, I ask you, Dan Rubenstein, pizza connoisseur.
Oh,
is cheese pizza for anyone over 17 years old, over or underrated? Your thoughts.
Under. Obviously underrated. And you want to ask me about something I've changed my mind on? That's something since I started baking pizza 10, 12, 14 times a week. That's something I've changed my mind on. Now, if you go to a place that you are not expecting good pizza to be served at, that's not great English. If you're going to a roller rink, right? If you're going to a touristy, you know, you're by the beach. Yeah. You're not getting good pizza, so you might as well get pepperoni at a roller rink, right? You might as well get sausage or like a veggie pie, because it's probably going to need as much flavor as possible to combat the probably pedestrian pizza effort overall. So if you're going to that type of place, like you're going to a vacation destination and there's just like a big old brew pub and they've got pizza, they got burgers, they got wings, they got salads, like the pizza's probably not going to be great the more that this place is cooking. So yes, load up on toppings at those places. But if you are into pizza on some level, beyond it just being like something you find delicious, if you are interested in finding really good pizza, you can taste the tomato and the cheese and how good the crust is primarily through ordering that plain cheese pie. I will order both a lot of times because I want to try as much as I can, but I think it's an underrated thing depending on the pizza destination. That's my pretentious answer. Do you feel that same way about, you know, a plain pie as you do like penne pasta? Like that's your way to judge? Like just ordering
I do.
The...
Yeah, no, I do. Okay. I'm glad you brought that up. I think we're of very...
Penne vodka.
Yeah, we're very like-minded here. Like,
yeah,
it's sometimes very difficult to do something that appears simple.
Yeah.
And cheese pizza, I think, falls into that category. It's a good baseline. Yeah. Everybody makes it. Everybody mm-hmm. makes a lot of the same, you know, pepperoni, sausage, that type of pizza. But there's nothing more simple than the old cheese pie. So I think it's very underrated, frankly. Yeah. And if you're ordering pies for a bunch of people, it's probably the one version of pizza that everybody can agree on.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Underrated.
My take, if I'm going to kick on my spurs at the Zesty Ranch... My take, which is an episode from a couple weeks ago that we had takes on, my zesty pizza take is the most overrated pizza that people seem to quite literally love is the meat lover's pie.
Okay.
If you're putting on pepperoni, sausage, ham, bacon onto a pizza. One, it's delicious. I'm not going to tell you it's not delicious. It's delicious. But as far as pizzas go, less to me is more. Still with toppings. Like, do pepperoni, garlic, do, you know, sausage and onion, whatever. But I think you want to taste both the pizza and the toppings. And when you start to load up with your Supremes or your Meat Lovers, I don't know.
What are at a certain point, what are they hiding? What are they consuming?
It's what are you hiding? And it's just go to a barbecue restaurant and get a meat platter. If you're interested in meat, go get a meat platter. Like, or if you're interested in meat, a ton of meat and pizza, get a bucket of wings and a pizza. Like, that to me is, generally speaking, Meat Lovers pizza is a cover for probably not great pizza.
On that note, we're going to hit stop here.
Yeah.
On the public show. This conversation will rage long after the final bell for about another half hour or so over on our Patreon, which again, you can find at verballers.com. You can sign up and get access to this show, early access to all of our shows beyond this one, and many other perks, including Discord, including, you know, being part of polls and other things that we plan on posting here in the very near future. So we appreciate everybody writing on in at solidverbal@gmail.com across all of our social media platforms. The public shows will again be back on Tuesday of next week as we inch ever so close to college football preview season. But in the meantime, Dan,